Rebel Women and Rebel Magic, written and read by Emma Catherine. Magic is as old as time and is found in all cultures. In all places, it has been used by those at the bottom, those with little or no control over their lives, the powerless, the poor, and the dispossessed. That magic has been found all over the world shows that despite politics, governments, and beliefs of any time, in moments of dire need, people have always turned to the occult and the magical. In this way, then, magic has always been an act of rebellion. If we consider the physical act of magic, of using knowledge beyond the ken of most people to effect change, then we can see it as a way of taking back control, of fighting back, of not just accepting one's lot in life. It is a way of saying no, of saying that you desire more than what is given. Spiritually, magic is a way of rebelling against forced ideas, beliefs, and norms. It is about freedom. That magic is an act of rebellion we have already distinguished, but that many practitioners have been women, that magic has always been associated with woman, and often in a negative way, is true. Think about the depictions of the witch, the stereotypical image of the ugly old hag living on the outskirts of society. But even this skewed image shows us something of the witch, sorceress, and occultist, that she cares not for the norms of society and seeks to live outside of them. This image of the witch, as caricatured as it might be, is also one of rebellion and highlights the fear rebellion inspires in the powers that be. Throughout history, women have used magic not only to effect change in their own personal lives, but on a wider scale, in times of life and death, when their very lives have been on the line. One such woman was Nanny of the Maroons, freedom fighter and a beer woman. Queen Nanny of the Maroons is Jamaica's only female national hero, and perhaps her story means so much to me because of my own heritage. I am mixed race. My maternal family are white British, my paternal family black Jamaican. Growing up, we learned that black people were slaves, that they were stolen from Africa, sold into slavery, and the ensuing horrors, and that's it. The history begins and ends there. We are not taught about their history before slavery, nor their culture or homelands, nor their beliefs, and so, as a person with black heritage, you are left wanting something more. There is more to my ancestry than slavery, and yet it is such a blot on humanity's history that we cannot ignore it. For so many thousands upon thousands of people, the slave trade was barbaric beyond words, and yet from the darkest place emerges a spirit so bright that today she is remembered as a hero and more. Truth be told, Nanny is as much a myth as reality, and there is very little actually documented about her life. What we do know is that she was born to the Ashanti tribe in what we know today as Ghana in West Africa, sometime around 1680. She was little more than a child when she was captured along with other members of her tribe, including her brothers, and sold into slavery by the Spanish. At that time, the Spanish were in control of Jamaica, then called Santiago, and on arrival, Nanny was sold to a plantation owner in the St. Thomas Parish. During the following years, there were many attempts to escape, and at some point there was success. Many slaves, including Nanny and her brothers, managed to escape to the Blue Mountain region of the island, south of St. Thomas Parish. This was a tumultuous period for the island, as the Spanish and British fought for control, and this no doubt aided the escape. In the end, the British were triumphant. Nanny, along with the other escapees, as well as some indigenous peoples from the Taino and Arawak tribes, settled in the mountains. The people here became known as the Windward Maroons. Others settled in the east of the island and were known as the Leeward Maroons. Today, the descendants of those communities still inhabit the same land. However, Nanny's story does not end here. Indeed, it is just the beginning of her mythos. These communities were not untroubled. The British needed to show strength. They couldn't risk any further uprisings and escapes, and so they targeted the Maroons, not only because of their success, but also because they offered refuge to other escapees and, even more dangerous, hope to those still enslaved. It is here where Nanny began to show her cunning, for she became a mighty military strategist, leading attacks against the British, hitting them where it hurt by attacking the sugar plantations. The plantations were a massive source of income for the British at that time. They were also a place of degradation and torture for those enslaved there, and so by attacking the plantations, not only did Nanny hurt the British, but she also swelled her own ranks, as many of the freed slaves found a home with the Maroons. The British tried to attack the Maroons in the jungle many times, but without success. For as well as her cunning and highly successful strategies, Nanny was also a mighty military leader, utilising guerrilla warfare tactics totally new to the British troops. the fear that would have spread amongst the soldiers as they headed into the thick Jamaican jungle along narrow, uneven tracks, with the sights and sounds of the jungle pressing in on all sides, and always the heavy heat and humidity would have been palpable and was a weapon in and of itself. And they were right to be afraid. Because of her extensive plant knowledge, Nanny came up with a way of camouflaging her fighters so that when the enemy troops did venture into the jungle, they had no idea just how close they were passing by Nanny's fighters until it was too late. Armed with only sticks and knives, Nanny's warriors would attack, ridding the better-equipped British soldiers of their weapons. Perhaps her greatest weapon, though, was her aura, her mystery. Nanny was known as an Obeah woman. Obeah is an African-derived magical and spiritual system that is still practiced in Jamaica and other parts of the Caribbean today. It involves, amongst other things, ancestor veneration, a deep knowledge of plant and animal lore and usage, as well as ritual. Indeed, there is a story of her magical prowess that is quite amusing. It was said that because of her powers, Nanny couldn't be hurt by enemy fire, or, more specifically, that she could catch the bullets with her buttocks. It is more likely, however, that this story is one of her cunning rather than magic. Nanny would set up decoys to draw enemy fire, so that what the British thought was Nanny was little more than a scarecrow, and so the bullets would pass through, and it would appear as though she was unhurt and unfazed. And if you can just imagine what this might have meant to those seeing that, both the enemy troops and the slaves, to the enemy troops, they would have seen a woman seemingly unfazed and unhurt by their fire. But to those still enslaved, they would have seen this mighty magical woman whom the British just couldn't hurt. And so you can see in that way then how Obeah and how the general aura of her helped others kind of believe in her. Despite the seemingly mundane origins of this story, that Nanny practiced Obeah is no secret, and that alone would have been a powerful tool. As a fighter, my coach always used to say that you lose in the mind before you do in the ring. What he means is that if you don't believe in yourself, if you don't think you can win, then no matter how skilled you are, you will lose. In this way then, Nanny's practice and the belief in her powers, her belief and that of her followers was as much a tool of her success as her military cunning. Nanny died around 1750, and again sources are conflicting. In Jamaica, a free woman, and more than that, one who had guaranteed the freedom of so many others, who had shown those with no power how to fight against their oppressors, and more importantly, that it could be done. If not for her name on an official government land treaty in which Britain gave the Maroons their land, a gesture of the face-saving variety, then it would be all too easy to label her as a mythical figure. Today, much like we have the figure of Robin Hood, Nanny of the Maroons has passed into legend as a freedom fighter who used magic to overcome her oppressors. Truly a rebel woman. So what does that mean for us today? I'd like to say that the issues we face are not so severe, and indeed for many, if not most of us here today, they are not. However, the truth is that slavery still continues in some parts of the world. There is slavery in Libya, and also in countries like our own, where modern slavery is on the rise. There's also constant war, child labour, human trafficking, sex trafficking, and a plethora of other human-centred problems without even going into the destruction of the planet. The truth is as well that even for those of us who come from relative places of comfort, it is all too easy to get caught up and lost in the problems that face us, and in the end, it's our own practices that suffer. As we have seen with Nanny's story, witchcraft and magic have been used as acts of rebellion and continue to be used as a way of effecting change. But what does that mean for female practitioners today? Part of the problem with that question is that it is too big and too vague. What does it mean to be a woman today and one who practices magic at that? There is no one defining characteristic, and the roles we fulfill are many and varied. What affects one woman will ultimately affect another in a different way. We all have different stresses and triggers. What I do see a lot of, however, especially when it comes to magical practice, are many women saying that for whatever reason, they just do not have the time or resources to build as deep and meaningful a practice as they would like. So what are the barriers that women encounter in their own practice? For some women, particularly those in westernised, industrialised countries, it's that work-home-life balance. Within that dynamic fall issues of childcare, family and work expectations. Whilst equal opportunities within the workplace continue to progress, they haven't moved quite so fast in other areas of women's lives. So for many women who go out to work all day, they then have to come home and perform the majority of childcare and housework tasks. And so the dynamic changes again for those women who also face financial difficulties, as well as the pressures already mentioned. And for the working poor, the dynamic changes yet again. And the issues might change depending on other criteria, including cultural implications and external factors such as racism, sexism, environment, and so on. You can see how complicated seemingly trivial issues can become. These issues can and do have an effect on one's ability to form any kind of magic, never mind rebel magic, and it is here, at this junction, that any act of magic becomes one of rebellion. Whilst it is easy to sneer at the triviality of some of the issues mentioned, the truth is when something, no matter how seemingly small, interferes with our practice, it weakens us, it reduces our power and takes a tool from our arsenal of empowerment. If we are too tired, if there are too many constraints on us so that we cannot build the kind of practice we desire, then how will we be able to tackle those wider, more serious problems? How will we be able to use rebel magic to affect the kind of change we want to see happen? And how does this relate to Nanny's story? Well, for the answer, we must look towards folk magic, particularly as it relates to rebel magic. Obeah, as a practice, has no dogma. There is no holy book, no rules for governance, and many of the individual aspects that comprise Obeah can be considered as aspects of folk magic, including plant use and knowledge, healing, protection, charms and divination. The Maroons didn't have much, and yet were able to overcome the better equipped and military trained British Army. Instead, it was Nanny's connection to and knowledge of the land and nature that helped them achieve their victory. I believe that connecting to the nearly forgotten ways and practices is a way of bringing a depth to everyday practice that for many is lacking. Incorporating aspects of folk magic into our craft is something anyone can do, regardless of where they are in the world or the means available to them. Today, in magical and pagan spheres, there are issues of racism, of cultural appropriation, and so on, and folk magic takes these issues into account. For me, much of folk magic focuses on the ancestors and the land, and you can only connect to the land where you are now, where you live, where you spend the most time, whether your ancestors hail from there or not. Nanny was originally from Ghana, and yet practiced her craft in the mountains of Jamaica because that is where she was and where her magic was needed. She knew the land there, worked with it, and because of this, she succeeded. At the same time, folk traditions can be handed down through the generations, including, as already mentioned, ancestor worship or veneration. This enables us then, in this modern age, where many of us are disconnected from the birthplace of our ancestors, to bring forth their traditions and meld them to the land where we find ourselves now. This is what makes folk magic accessible to all. It is this aspect we can use today to enable us to deepen our craft. Folk magic doesn't require you to buy anything. You should be able to find everything you need at home and in the local environment. Connecting to the land, the natural cycles and rhythms, learning what grows where and when, what can be eaten and what mustn't, are all ways of relying less on capitalism and more on ourselves and the land. It's also about finding the freedom to make your craft what you want it to be, and this is the first act of rebellion. Nanny's story shows us that we can then move on to the wider issues facing the world. By taking the first steps towards rebellion, by making our magic rebel magic, we can free ourselves from the constraints that bind us and help those who are yet, for whatever reason, to find their own rebel nature.